Welcome to Lead with Heart. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, and today we explore the essence of leadership beyond strategy and status. You're watching Now Media Television.
All right. It's going to be a good day. Welcome to Lead with Heart on Now Media TV. I am your host, Dr. Jesse Hansen. I am here at the spectacular Hotel 360 in Ojo Chao, Costa Rica. So let's go check it out. Some of the most unique architecture you're going to see. This is where the rains drip down and create a nice atmosphere. So like work with nature.
Boutique hotel where we got 12 rooms, private, so we can connect to the mountain and the beach at the same time. So as you can see, we got an amazing view from here.
Come on, we're going to check out one of these spectacular rooms. Incredible. The bed is super nice. However, I am called right away to check out here. Absolutely incredible.
Nature, peaceful, quiet. Animals, quiet.
It's called Hotel 360 because of the amazing panoramic view, which,
yeah. Exactly. So I want you to go over here where you can look at it a little better, the view.
Yeah.
So we got Caño Island deeper over here. And Corcovado, those are two national parks where you can find a lot of different animals.
And yeah, this pool is just spectacular. It goes all the way wrapping around.
That's the restaurant. We got the bar here. We got our waitress, Sofia, over there.
Hola. Well, thank you so much, Steven. Awesome tour. Thanks for letting us be here today. So this is the tour of Hotel 360. And I chose to shoot here today, not because just it is so beautiful. And obviously that's beautiful to share that and look at the amazing nature of Costa Rica. As a psychologist and a retreat facilitator, I know that the set and setting matter. This open ambiance, this beautiful nature, this setting, this space is gonna help them open up even deeper and find even deeper parts of their authenticity so we can all keep leading with heart. So stay tuned for more here on Now Media TV with Lead with Heart. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen. Pura Vida. Hello and welcome to Lead with Heart, where we explore leadership that merges innovation with purpose. I'm your host, Dr. Jesse Hansen. And today's guest has built billion-dollar companies and now invests in expanding human consciousness. Shelby Clark is an entrepreneur, seed stage investor, and a partner at Lionheart Ventures, focusing on mental health and psychedelic therapies. He was the founding CEO of Turo, the world's first and largest peer-to-peer car-sharing marketplace, and now a profitable multi-dollar, billion-dollar company. Shelby is also the founder of CASA, the Queer Retreat Center in Costa Rica. We're happy to have you here today, Shelby. Welcome. Shelby, welcome to Lead with Heart.
Thanks for having me, Jesse.
So happy you're here. Thank you so much. We're going to start today with the essence of this show is becoming, I always knew it was about authenticity and vulnerability in leadership. And then I started to realize I wanted to expand leadership beyond just corporate CEOs and big time execs to realize leadership can happen in families, it happens in communities, it happens in religious communities, it happens everywhere. And so we're looking at you as a leader, but also what is leadership? What is it to lead, to be a role model? And the other part of the show that's evolving is that rather than just kind of knowing all the great things you've done, which I do want to know, I want to know how you got there. So this first segment is about a blast to the past. It's about going back to understand who you were before Turo, before what you're doing now. So as much as you're comfortable, man, take us back, you know, childhood dynamics, adolescence, what helped shape you? What drives you?
Good question. All right, well, where to start? First of all, thank you for having me. Great to be here, and what a beautiful place. I grew up in suburban Denver, Aurora, Colorado, as a little queer kid. And I was a bit of a dork, but I had a best friend, Thatcher, and we would sort of run home from school every day, and we would like play chess and do sort of dorky things. And it was great when we were together. And then in the fifth grade, he moved away. Sixth grade, sort of beginning of middle school, I had to like make friends. It's not like a really great time to need to make friends. And, you know, as this young queer kid who sort of felt different, I had, I was looking at other places for validation, for love, for acceptance. And, I was a really good student. And so I started to get a lot of like, validation from my parents when I did well in school. And I was a swimmer, and I got to be a really good swimmer. And so I got to lots of praise when I did when I won races and things like that.
Okay.
And so just sort of I kept down this path and doing more and more, and I became I was the valedictorian of my high school class. I was an All-American swimmer. It felt really good to sort of get this, you know, this approval. And so I think that this sort of overachiever really kicked into gear. So I went to a good college. I got a good job coming out of college. And then got a fancy MBA, went to Harvard. And again, sort of continued this was sort of working. Like I was getting the external validation that I was looking for.
Because there's light and shadow here already, right? The shadow of feeling dorky or feeling like, you know, lost by the friend as well as just fitting in, but it's driving you to keep succeeding.
Absolutely.
Okay. So keep flowing with this. Let me hear.
Yeah. And there were parts of this were great, you know, like I was sort of doing great things in the world. And so then, you know, the next step was to start a successful company. And so while I was at Harvard getting an MBA, I started a company which became Turo. So Turo is a peer-to-peer car sharing marketplace. So it's sort of like Airbnb for cars. If you have a car, we're not using it, you can rent it out to a neighbor.
Yeah, brilliant.
And so it was a really weird idea at the time. Nobody was doing this.
And this is what, 15, 10, how long?
2008.
So it was almost
20 years ago.
Wow. Wow. So ahead of the times.
And we became like swept up in sort of the sharing economy and started raising venture capital funding. The sharing economy became this big thing with like Airbnb and TaskRabbit, all these companies sharing things. It was a great sort of antidote to the economic crisis of 2008. And so we became like a sort of a poster child for this, you know, front page articles in the New York Times, you know, cover stories in The Economist, Time Magazine, like, and I personally was sort of the face of this. And so, you know, it's getting all this sort of approval sort of like continuing to amplify. Yeah. And then I got pushed out of the company. My investors, they pushed me out of company. And
for with just cause, with no reason, with,
I mean, in the end, I think it was a great thing. Yeah, you know, at the time it felt really aggressive and like, and, but I decided not to really fight it. I could have sort of gone to war and was like, maybe this is a good thing. And, you know, hindsight, it's been a great thing. I think that like, I've been able to go on and do other things in the world. And it's a very different thing to sort of be a founder of a company and to grow a company. But to sort of like accept that I'm not good at everything, you know, and really to be sort of like, it felt like very publicly pushed out of something, felt humiliating. And beyond this, I think there was a big question of like, who am I without this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I've like, my identity has become so consumed and affiliated with this. Like, who am I without it?
With Turo.
Yeah.
Right. And you were relatively young when that took off. You were still early in the 20s, right?
Late 20s. Yeah.
Late 20s. Okay. So yeah, you got your identity wrapped up in that. And I want to slow it down real quick and just say, yeah, I think, you know, you mentioned the word dorky, you mentioned the word queer, you mentioned, so I get themes of like, you know, either feeling abandoned or pushed out, not belonging. So if you're open to going a little deeper, just how that was for you personally, and also seeing where that pattern repeated there at late 20s or whatever, when you were pushed out. You know, and yet how I like the part of the story where you're saying I could have fought it, but I decided not to, because I would imagine that any instance of being pushed out doesn't feel good, period. But especially if you already had that back then sort of driving you to do this. So I don't know, anything you can say about just, yeah, being the somewhat of an oddball as a young guy, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, as a, you know, a queer person, like I didn't feel like I fit in. Yeah. And so, I like mistook sort of the approval that I was getting for succeeding for belonging.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a,
I want to hear that. You mistook the success for the approval for belonging.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's powerful.
There's a big difference between fitting in and belonging.
Yeah.
And it's taken me years to figure that out, but it felt like with these, people were accepting me. And they were, it was this mask that they were approving of.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I had this identity as an entrepreneur. And so after I got pushed out of Turo, I almost immediately started another company. And then that company failed. So then it was, well, crap. What's next? Who am I without this? And, you know, it's like, do I start another company? And if I do, does it have to, at this point, Turo is doing quite well. So it's like, does it have to be more successful than Turo? Does it have to have a deeper impact than Turo? Like, when is it enough? What does it even mean?
Yeah, because still on that same trajectory of success equals belonging, but not really.
Yeah. So we've got to have it all figured out. And so I spent a lot of time on a 5-year plan. Like, what am I going to do next? And I was just spinning my wheels. And in this, like, without having purpose, direction, I fell into a depression. On a bit of a whim, I decided to do a yoga teacher training in Bali.
Oh, wow.
I just knew that when I moved my body, I felt better.
Was that your first dance into embodiment or?
I had a practice of yoga, but it was something I did occasionally. Okay. It wasn't like a really deep practice. And so I called my sister and I said, you want to do yoga teacher training in Bali? And she's like, I don't want to be a yoga teacher. And I was like, I don't either. Let's go to Bali. And she's like, put it that way. And so I spent a month like on a deep dive into embodiment, into movement, dance, breath, mantra, philosophy, and it lit me up, you know, sort of got me out of my head and into my body and sort of turned the camera around in life from like seeking things externally to like looking inward.
And this is now like early 30s, Shelby?
Yeah.
Late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah, so early 30s. Okay.
But as Turo is, you're getting kicked out of there, that's what turned you to this.
This was several years later at this point.
Okay.
But, and you know, then, so this yoga teacher training was super powerful for me. And then at the end of this, I did my first plant medicine ceremony and I was primed, you know, it was just like, I was open and all of these things that I had learned sort of with my intellectual brain primed me for this. And so in this ceremony where, you know, I just sort of dissolved into connection with everything and it was like, oh, this is what they were talking about. And it just became this beautiful thing of feeling deep compassion for myself, of feeling connected to everything in the world. And it's tough to feel alone when you feel connected to everything. And it sort of just, it was a major turning point.
Wow. Yeah, I'm pulling some themes out as I'm listening to you, Shelby, of even though you, Harvard, obviously an amazing school, brings lots of stature and clout, and then creating Turo, having it go so well, can only imagine, you know, what that would have felt like, especially as a young man and someone that had been maybe felt not belonging before. So I see the light in that. And I see the theme of, though it was amazing, it was not authentic.
Yeah.
Because like you said, it was a mask. It was a push from that place of feeling outcast to I'm going to gain belonging by success as opposed to soul.
Yeah.
And so, and then like by having been pushed out, like you said, what a blessing, even in the moment, probably was humbling. But then I also love to hear that by your tapping into this yogic practice and ceremony, you start to develop not only like embodiment, but authenticity. And that's one of the main elements that I want to keep drawing out in this show is what's the difference between the authentic style of leadership and the style of leadership that is, you know, for show, right? So I really appreciate you bringing that all to the forefront. And I too also can relate to that in my journey as well, Shelby, like, you know, so much time in my head. And though I didn't identify as queer, I was actually teased and called queer because I was raised by more sensitive parents. So I wasn't a normal rough and tough redneck where I grew up. And it was the same that wounding took me more into living through my head and living through, you know, success being good. And it wasn't until it was my early 20s when I also started to experiment with embodiment and more holistic practices. And that's where I look back to say it fully shifted my life, right? So I so appreciate your vulnerability. I appreciate you showing up with all this. We are going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to dive deeper into where the journey has continued to take you as that turn happened from being disingenuous to authentic. So stay tuned. We'll be back soon on Lead with Heart.
We'll be right back with more insights, stories, and practices to help you lead from your whole self. This is Lead with Heart on Now Media Television. Leadership isn't just about decisions. It's about presence, compassion, and courage. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, somatic psychologist and healer. And on Lead with Heart, we explore what happens when we lead with awareness, compassion, and the body in mind. From brain health to relational intelligence, from trauma-informed leadership to embodied teams, each episode reveals a deeper way to lead. Lead with Heart is airing now on Now Media TV. because the greatest leaders don't just guide people, they awaken them. And we're back. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, and you're watching Lead with Heart on Now Media Television. Let's continue embracing leadership with presence and purpose.
Hello, welcome back to Lead with Heart. Want to stay tuned to all the Now Media favorites, including this show? Don't forget, you can download the app on Apple TV, Roku, iOS, and Android. Keep tuned with us as well on podcasts. We're on all the major streaming platforms. So stay tuned with Now Media. We've got you covered. Welcome back. We're here with Shelby Clark. So excited to see you again. Thank you for being here. You were leaving off with this neat story trajectory of starting to discover your authentic self through embodiment, through going to Bali. You've got Turo. You've been kicked out of that. You started something else, didn't go. So you're soul searching. And yeah, help us understand who you are becoming, where this journey's taken you up to today.
Sure. So I think that, again, that yoga teacher training and then that the plant medicine ceremony were real turning points for me. And after that, I think I stopped trying to have it figured out. I stopped really trying to continue achieving and being really driven by that. And I started to be guided by what felt right, by intuition, by
your body.
Yeah, by my
heart,
body.
Your heart.
Absolutely, by my heart. And what that looked like at the beginning was to because I didn't know. I was like, what is my authentic self? Yeah. You know? And so it was a bit of a trial and error, you know, like what feels right. And so the first thing I started doing was meeting with just inspired people. Like, who were the coolest people that I could find doing the coolest things? And so one person who I was incredibly inspired by was a woman named Alora Hardy. So she is a leading bamboo architect in Bali. I went into one of the buildings that she designed, and it's called the Heart of School in Bali, at the Green School. The Heart of School at the Green School in Bali. And it's this like towering building. And I was brought to tears. Like, architecture had never done this to me before. It was this sort of this like organic shape that just like held you. And I don't know, it was just so unique. And I was like, who is this person? What is she doing? And she turned out to be this incredible artist who was suddenly running a 250 person company, and she was struggling.
Wow.
And so I offered to help her, you know, like I didn't ask for any money. I didn't know what would come out of it, but I was just like, maybe I can help this person and maybe I can learn something from her. I met a yoga teacher, and a guy named Scott Lyons, and he was all inspired about this project in Costa Rica, this yoga retreat that him and three partners were going to build, two partners. And I was like, well, I'm an entrepreneur. Maybe I can help you. And so these were just a couple of connections that like, they didn't really make sense at the time. Like I had nothing to do. No, there's no future in these things. I wasn't doing them because I expected something, because it was going to help me achieve something. I did them because I was inspired. And it took a while, like twists and turns in life, to sort of like figure out where they would take me. But it's interesting. So my background is in building technology. And the way that most technology is built today is called agile, like an agile approach to engineering. So you sort of have this idea of where you're going, but you build one step at a time. And the engineers will not give you a roadmap. They will not say, it's going to take us, you know, 24 weeks to get here. Right. You know, they're like, we're going to build this feature and this feature and this feature. And you build a feature, and then you sort of say, what did we learn? Where are we now? And the next step should be different based off of what you learned in the first one. It's not a failure if the plan changes. It is an improvement. And so in many ways, I've sort of joked that like I've now done that with life. You know, I have the agile approach to life, where it's been sort of like one step at a time that has felt right. I went back to, I was living in the Bay Area at the time, and I was still very involved in Silicon Valley. And so started to figure out like where I fit and what I was inspired by. I mentioned that I had a really profound experience with plant medicine. And I found out that there actually was an entire psychedelic medicine industry that was emerging, that it wasn't just a bunch of, you know, hippies in the jungle. There was like a whole industry that was forming, and that there was a company, MAPS, and it was bringing MDMA through the Food and Drug Administration as like a formal, you know, legal drug. And I was like, how can I help in this? know, like, wow, this is incredible. And so I started to, you know, peel layers back and see how I could potentially get involved. I met interesting people. And so twists and turns, sort of, the project continued to move forward in Costa Rica. I met another incredible person, Ian Michael Haber, who had this beautiful vision for plant medicine retreat and community and nature. And it was, at the time, the yoga retreat in Costa Rica didn't have any of those elements, but sort of the right ingredients were put in place. And so next thing I knew, the yoga retreat actually failed. Mm-hmm. And in this, there was a big question about do we let go of the land, or like, what do we do? Ian Michael had come down and had this vision for Holos. And so I was like, well, before I let go of this land, like, let me come back and have an experience. And so Ian Michael was hosting a retreat. And one day there was a ceremony on the land. And I got to come and experience the land through the eyes of the people that came. And it was nothing short, but it was incredible to see how people were coming together, to see how it was opening them up to connections with themselves, connections with each other, connections with nature, this stunning piece of land.
Yeah.
And I remember I was swimming through one of these waterfalls during the ceremony and just looking around and be like, this is it. I don't know what I was looking for, but like, here it is. And I went back at the end of the day to some pretty sobering news. It was January 6, 2021. And so if you remember, that was the day of the Capitol riots in the United States.
Yes.
And I was like, what is happening? Like, what is going on up there? And
especially in contrast, having just come out of the jungle and the peacefulness
and
the ceremony.
You know, I was like, things are falling apart. And I was like, is it okay for me just to do this? To like, can I just like not go back? Do I need to have like a civic responsibility and like go and change the system and like fight? And I was like, no. Like, the world needs new ways of living in connection with community, in connection with nature. And my life force is way better spent building part of this. And it's totally fine for me not to go and fight and to invest my energy in this. And so with that, Holos got rolling. And, you know, as we started to move with Ian Michael and to build there, and I was really diving into more of these practices, ceremony, embodiment, I was realizing that, you know, there was so much growth and transformation for people. And for me personally, the biggest area that I was growing and working on, I'm going to call it, was healing the trauma of growing up gay.
Healing the trauma of growing up gay. Yeah. Okay.
Of having these moments, these periods of life when I just couldn't accept who I was, when I actively hid who I was, when I lied in small to large ways about who I was.
And I'm guessing some of that lying or disingenuous had to do back younger and adolescence, even in the building of the Harvard guy and all that, right? Like, it just didn't fit in.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. How can I cover this with something that's acceptable?
Yeah.
With something that will be loved, that will be embraced, as opposed to just like leading with who I was. Yeah. Right. And so, so I realized like, hey, if this is what I'm working on, and I know that like many people in my community, in the queer community, are you know, struggling with similar things.
That sense of belonging, that sense of not being judged all the time. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it best for me to heal these wounds, to grow and expand in a container of everybody? Or what if it was a group of queer people? Mm-hmm. What if it was for queer people, by queer people? Would that be different? And I initially didn't know. You know, I had a hypothesis that would be meaningful and important. And so I ended up putting on a gathering, some friends, facilitators, to come down and do sort of an experiment. And it was in June of 2021 to say, what would it be like to have a queer retreat? Is this important? And the answer was yes. It was a beautiful experience. I think that people opened up incredibly quickly. There was this deep sense of connection and community and vulnerability.
Yeah.
You know, like, we talk about different things in the queer community. You know, I'm currently in a polyamorous throuple, you know, like, it's, I shrink about discussing, like, even saying that here,
Of, what kind of judgments come with that? Yeah. But this is your authentic self.
Exactly. Right? Can I speak about that openly?
Yeah.
And so to create spaces that you can speak it openly. It was impactful.
Yeah. Hold on, I want to slow down a second to create spaces where you can just be yourself. It's so healing, whether it's the queer community, whether it's the
everybody
geek community, whatever, right?
Human truth.
Yeah, human truth. To be seen and witnessed, there's something so healing about that, and to not be judged, right? Wow. Wow. Okay, man. Yeah, no, you said a lot there. I want to quickly reflect on some themes I'm hearing of just, yeah, the power of you had by going through all of the disingenuous times, which was not really, you didn't want to be disingenuous. It was that the world and community was showing you it's not going to go so well if you be you. Who you are is not okay. That's what ultimately helped you to create Toru, which is awesome. Like, you did a great thing there. Thank you. I've used it. It's a great app. It's an awesome app. Thank you, Shelby. And it's just so touching to me of, you know, I am a hugely nerd on bihemispheric brain activity, which means getting left and right brains both working together. And what that means is, like, the skills and the excellence that it took you to get through Harvard to get to build Toru, to run something like that, very left brain, and you have that. But then as that shifted and the other business failed and you find embodiment, all of a sudden now you're getting in touch with your right brain. Mm-hmm. And now here you are all these years later, really living a truly beautiful bihemispheric life. So I want to acknowledge that for our viewers, just how special and how rare that is to have someone that can bridge both worlds so beautifully, you know?
It's a practice.
And it never ends, right? Yeah.
I'll figure it out now.
There are upgrades, though. There are upgrades that we get to, and then it's like, okay, now I got to get to this next one. I really love this, and you've said some key lines, too, of just, you said I started leading. You didn't quite say lead with heart, but you said I started leading with who I really am. Which I would also say, yeah, with what felt right, right? And that to me is such an important variable to play with and learn. What is it really to lead with heart? Is that sometimes we've got to lean into what just feels right intuitively as opposed to what makes sense on paper.
Which is not what we're taught.
Right, exactly. It's the opposite of what we taught, especially at MBA, right? So, wow, no, this is so beautiful, man. You're bringing up so much wisdom. So we're going to take a quick pause. When we get back, we're going to look deeper at the process of the Lotus, which is to go into deeper look at how you've actually made all this transformation happen. So please stay tuned on Lead with Heart. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen.
We'll be right back with more insights, stories, and practices to help you lead from your whole self. This is Lead with Heart on Now Media Television. Leadership isn't just about decisions. It's about presence, compassion, and courage. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, somatic psychologist and healer. And on Lead with Heart, we explore what happens when we lead with awareness, compassion, and the body in mind. From brain health to relational intelligence, from trauma-informed leadership to embodied teams, each episode reveals a deeper way to lead. Lead with Heart is airing now on Now Media TV, because the greatest leaders don't just guide people, they awaken them. And we're back. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, and you're watching Lead with Heart on Now Media Television. Let's continue embracing leadership with presence and purpose.
Welcome back to Lead with Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Jesse Hansen, and on this segment, we're going to dive deeper into the process of the Lotus. If you're not familiar, the Lotus is a beautiful flower. However, it's got interesting origins. It grows out of muck. And so for that reason, we're going to use that metaphor to look at how human beings do the same thing. Take something that doesn't feel good, kind of mucky, and turn it into something beautiful. So I'm sitting here today with a beautiful flower known as Shelby Clark. Thanks for being here. Touched deeply by your story already. And you've brought us pretty much forward to where you are now. Before you fully unveil what you're working on, I was hoping you could, again, kind of slow us down, take us back. You've mentioned that, yeah, I think the words you used was realizing really the main core wound you have been healing is that the trauma of being a gay guy young and not being in an inclusive community. Mm-hmm. So I'm just hopeful you could open up more for our viewers just to help understand that. I'm sure there are other people that can relate, whether they identify as queer or whether they identify as I mentioned I was teased in my own ways. So I think there's a wisdom in this of that feeling of being told you're not okay how you are, deeper into what that was like for you and feed us into, you know, how you've actually started to shift that.
Yeah. I mean, maybe first of all, this clarify, like, I don't think I wasn't in an unaccepting community. You know, I think it was like, it was more my perception.
Okay.
It was more like being able to accept parts of myself.
Wow. Okay. So it wasn't even necessarily external forces saying too much stuff. It was internal.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think if you thinking about the Lotus, if I think it's like, there was a bit of like a bottom, you know, in my 20s, as I was really struggling to accept this part of myself, I decided to date a woman. It was like, let me cover this up.
And it was fully from a cover up. It wasn't genuine curiosity.
It wasn't genuine curiosity.
No, it was literally like, I'm going to do this move to fit in.
I think it was like a desire. It was like, I hope I can make this work.
Mm.
I had been with women in the past and it was all right. And I wasn't attracted to her. And so, even though she was this beautiful, you know, incredible human being, and I was at a friend's house and I opened up his medicine cabinet and I saw Viagra in there. And without thinking, I stole three of them. I just put them in my pocket. And when I got home, I sort of thought about what happened. I was like, I just stole from a friend. Like, even it was, it felt small,
yeah,
but it was like, yeah, I actually stole from somebody today to cover up this thing that I can't cover up myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, whoa.
Mm.
And, you know, it just made me realize like how much I was actively like covering myself up, how much I was like actively, even to myself.
And what extents you were going to.
Yeah.
To try to cover it up to you. Wow.
And so, you know, this, what we're talking about, these moments later were more than a decade later. And so in many parts it was like, oh, this is beyond me, right? Right? Like... And so I think I realized that there was still a lot there. Healing this trauma of growing up gay. Yeah. And so seeing the beauty of what we're doing at Holos and saying like, hey, I think there's a real need for this in the queer community as well. Went down the hill from Holos and ended up building another retreat center in beautiful bamboo with the help of Laura Hardy. The retreat center is called Casa. Casa is the Spanish word for home. Spelled C-A-S-A, but we spell Casa with a Q. To represent the queer experience, really as this place of coming home, and beginning coming home to yourself.
No, and I love it. And I actually, for viewers to know, I know Shelby well, and I know Casa, and it is truly spectacular what you are creating there. Before we go deeper into, I want to hear more about what that is. I'm wondering if you can open up just about, where have you had to go inside yourself to come to acceptance? And I'm assuming it's still in process, but I also know like you exude self-love, you exude positive energy. So, you know, where was it? Was it only after Bali that you started making progress in that? And what, as much as you're open sharing, I would call it the intrapsychic plane, like where, how did you help heal this insecurity?
I think it was just an ongoing process of surrender. You know, of being like, I don't know what's going to happen here. Like, I'm willing to take a risk.
Yeah.
I'm willing to make a mistake.
Yeah.
I'm willing to go down a completely wrong path for the sake of that. I'm willing to, I'm willing to get out of my head and into my body. Yeah. Like, that was a huge thing for me.
Probably the key shift.
Yeah, probably right? The key shift.
The distance from here to here.
Absolutely. You know, like, because we can get really caught up in the past, ruminating about, oh my God, I can't believe I said that. Like, or fearing about the future, you know, like what's going to happen about these things that probably won't happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, the joy of life is in the moment,
yeah,
right? There's like so much here. If we can sort of get out of our way.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, can I feel joy? Can I feel love? Can I play for the sake of play, right? Can I create space for this? And without needing to have a, you know, a reason or an excuse or, being able to come into my body, into the moment, and making a practice of this, of reminding myself to come back, reminding myself to play, reminding myself that to be guided by pleasure and desire and that these things are okay. They bring us forward in life. They're sparks of creativity, of energy that bring us forward. And so realizing things in myself, and then trying to piece apart like, how can this be useful for other people as well.
Yeah. I can relate to that so much too. As a psychologist and healer, I often just tell people quite humbly and honestly, like, I am simply sharing with you and guiding you through what has worked for me, you know? And so there's a saying, you know, healer, heal thyself. And I feel like that's what you're describing. The path to the heart, the path of embodiment, bringing you more present, bringing you more touched into your joy. Definitely, yeah, that's what I was kind of referring to, is seeing that shift from, like you said, it wasn't even necessarily you had some awful community that was minimizing you. It was somehow from inside. And so that is all our own head, to your point, you know, just looping about what you think people are thinking, as opposed to really being present. And it sounds to me like just by getting more into embodiment, getting more into practices that allow you to be in your heart, plus from your story, you shared with me that at that time you were not the CEO of Toro and you were not running anything else, right? So you also had that break from all those pressures and mental processes to really just drop into yourself.
Right? Yeah.
Go ahead. Did you want to say?
Yeah. So, but it was interesting. Like, I feel like I had this other real wound as a leader, having this like very traumatic experience of being pushed out of Turo. I didn't want to be a leader again. I didn't want that risk of like having it taken away, of having being pushed out. And, but I found myself a leader again. You know, I found myself with CASA, like I was the leader. I created this. I was building it. And
still are.
Thank you. But I think because of this fear, I was afraid to show up as a leader, sort of my wounded leader. And it was problematic. You know, there were times when I was needed to lead and I didn't want to step forward. When I was like, I'm just going to find a great general manager who's going to take these things off my plate. And it didn't work. That I was required to step forward. Like I was required to set a culture, set a tone.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm just going to hide in the back. And, you know, it took me a while to sort of realize, and there were some painful moments and points, some real issues in the team that stemmed from my fear of stepping forward as a leader.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. No, I love you saying that, because also, as you know, for our viewers to know how this works even more, is Shelby's been vulnerable to admit there was that feeling of not belonging from young, and you found a way to kind of adapt around it, and yet you admitted it wasn't the most authentic path, but it worked. It got you success. It got you out of that place. And then the recreation of that by being told you don't belong as a leader of Toro anymore, right? So I just want to acknowledge that pattern and also just say it takes definite courage and vulnerability and strength to not let that take you down, you know, and not keep recreating that. So I'm so grateful not only for your own growth, but for all the people that I know that you're now helping to awaken, is that because you had the courage to face that leader wound and come back around and step up, you know. It's very beautiful, very beautiful. And I feel like there, you know, we all have some story of that, whether we identify as a leader or not, but the things that where we got hurt younger will come back again in our life. And it's not trying to avoid them or make that never happen is not going to work. It's more of knowing, okay, as this happens, how am I going to navigate this? How am I going to hold all of this? You mentioned also, and I want to, we're going to take a break in a moment, in the final segment, we're going to go deeper into really the depth of CASA and the wisdom and what you're doing now. Quickly, before we go, I just want to know, yeah, what else can you say about the embodiment part and or maybe ceremonial influences, but just the way that your body's helped you find your authenticity?
Wow. Yeah. So one of my greatest teachers is an incredible man named Lauren Roche. Lauren translated a text called the Radiant Sutras.
Yeah.
And this is a modern translation of an ancient tantric text that roughly translates to the terror and the joy of realizing oneness with the soul. And that is so beautiful. Wow. The terror and the joy of realizing oneness with the soul. And it's through just connection with the body in the moment. And it's 112 sutras, or like these little love poems to life, these opportunities to savor the moment for the fullness of it, not just the good. You know, there are sutras about pain. There are sutras about pleasure, sex, taste. Mm-hmm. There's one that's just like a meditation on taste of essentially, like making out with a cherry.
Yeah.
Like And, you know, you can just like throw cherries in your mouth and just move past them, or you can like just savor one.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to do this. Like, and there's imitation in every moment. Can I like pause and can I savor this? Or am I rushing past this to something else? Like, can I stop and smell the proverbial flowers?
Yeah.
And there's time for this. Even the busiest person, you can spend a minute, you can spend 10 minutes. Like, can I create a practice that is the highlight of my day from being in my body, finding joy, being guided by pleasure?
Yeah. The body is that portal. It's the only way. And if it's in our head, it's only half real at best, right? Wow. Now, so much wisdom here, man. Thank you again, Shelby. When we get back, guys, we're going to dive into deeper wisdom that Shelby's bringing by his vulnerability. So stay tuned here on Lead with Heart.
We'll be right back with more insights, stories, and practices to help you lead from your whole self. This is Lead with Heart on Now Media Television. Leadership isn't just about decisions. It's about presence, compassion, and courage. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, somatic psychologist and healer. And on Lead with Heart, we explore what happens when we lead with awareness, compassion, and the body in mind. From brain health to relational intelligence, from trauma-informed leadership to embodied teams, each episode reveals a deeper way to lead. Lead with Heart is airing now on Now Media TV. Because the greatest leaders don't just guide people, they awaken them. And we're back. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, and you're watching Lead with Heart on Now Media Television. Let's continue embracing leadership with presence and purpose.
All right, we're back on Lead with Heart. You want to stay connected to myself, Lead with Heart, and all the Now Media great shows? Don't hesitate to download the app on Apple, Roku, iOS, and Android. We're also out there on all the great podcast formats, so look us up to stay connected. Now Media's got you covered. We're back here on Lead with Heart for our final segment with Shelby Clark. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
This segment is all about extracting the wisdom. Shelby's been extremely vulnerable with us today, sharing not just about his business success, but about the actual human experience behind it, what's driven him, what's gotten him through it. So in this last segment, we're going to learn not only deeper about what he's up to now with CASA, but also about the relevant wisdom that's applicable to all of us, because when someone is vulnerable, it helps all of us get vulnerable. So thank you, Shelby, for leading the way. Tell us more. What wisdom do you, I feel like what you're creating with CASA is the collection of all the wisdom that you've been collecting so far on your path. So yeah, let us know more about it. And what are some of the guiding principles and constructs that you work with?
Absolutely. So we've now had about 1,000 people that have come through CASA. And so we've been able to learn a lot about like why people come and how the experience can impact them. I think we noticed a very common pattern that a lot of people arrive very disconnected. A lot of these things are true for the queer community, but these are also human truths. I think this is a thing in our society today.
That, especially in North with screens and rat race, everyone's so fast and disconnected, right?
And it's interesting when they arrive to CASA. So it's beautiful landscape. It's all bamboo architecture that's totally open air. You are and the nature is thriving. Yeah. You feel it, like the sounds of nature, the vibration, like you feel this in your body. And so it can be alarming, like to go from these like very safe, you know, cement boxes to like connection.
Yeah. And the wild, right? Like you said, it's like, it's exciting, but also sometimes, whoa, I need to pay attention here.
Absolutely.
Be present.
And so there was a couple of things that sort of we saw really helped with this disconnection. And authenticity, come back into connection with yourself. Embodiment.
Yeah.
We were talking about getting out of the head and into the body. And then connection and community. And so we've been working on, how can we articulate these things? How can we make sure we're bringing these elements into all of the programs that we do? We've now come up with something we call the CASA Foundations. So sort of what CASA, the house, is built on.
Okay.
As I am, it was authenticity in this body, embodiment, I belong. It's connection and community. Mm-hmm. So as I am in this body, I belong. And you know, I think that these are, this isn't meant to be sort of like a, something that like, you're told to believe, you know, I think these are meant to be invitations because these can be really challenging concepts, you know, to be able to accept yourself as you are.
Yeah.
To honor that, you know, you are worthy as you are.
It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to embody it and feel it.
And so we invite people to sort of, if they feel safe to do it, to sort of repeat these phrases and see how they land on their body. Mm-hmm. You know, how do they feel if they say, I belong? Like, does that trigger, like, do they tense up? Are they like, who are you to tell me I belong?
Yeah.
And, you know, we think that these are, you know, these are really important sort of human truths that can be resonant, I think, again, especially for the queer community, but for everybody.
Really applicable. Yeah.
And so to understand where there is, you know, where there's ease, where there's resistance, like this can be really useful guideposts for people to understand maybe there's an opportunity to go deeper here.
Yeah. Wow. So can you say that key phrase again? In my?
As I am, in my body, I belong.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Each time you say it, I get a nice feeling inside. And I, if I play along with your exercise, it's even for me as someone that does not identify as queer, there's pieces that come up of like, wow, is it okay? Like I probably, hopefully everyone can recognize we all have some kind of insecurity or pieces of the body, places in the body that feel, you know, don't want people to see it or whatever. Just that language, you're right. I can imagine and sense how much it would have meaning, especially for someone that's identified with queer who's felt not belonging. But I also like that you're saying it is universally applicable. It really is, you know?
So maybe we're gonna dive into this a little bit. So, you know, the first one, as I am, and this is really about authenticity, you know, being able to accept yourself as worthy as you are.
And clarifying, authentic does not mean good, perfect, and happy. Authentic means true, means like what is actually happening. If I'm mad, that's authentic to be mad in that moment.
Yeah.
And what I recognize and my teachers have helped me realize is that when we can just give way to what's authentic, the next best thing happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
But when we hide and suppress what's authentic, crap happens.
Absolutely.
Right?
You know, putting on these masks that I think I need to do to be accepted, to be loved, to be safe. But they hide who we are and they take us away from this. So inviting people back into this authenticity. We've talked a little about embodiment, but I think this is really getting out of the head and into the body. This is where life happens. This is where our emotion lives. This is where joy, pleasure, desire.
Humanness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that like, in Western society, we're very cerebral. We're really like, we're thinking a lot. You know, our phones get us out of our body. You know, we're sort of scrolling, and so this is an invitation back into the moment.
Yeah.
And then the last piece of this is I belong, and this may be one of the most difficult ones. And I think that so we love Brené Brown, if you know Brené Brown's work.
Of course.
She's done some really great work and research on belonging. Like, what does it mean to belong? And first of all, like belonging is just a human need, you know, on the order of like food and shelter. Like this is human connection is critical. And we learn this, you know, as children, as infants, we're helpless. Like we rely on that connection. And so we really learn how to attune ourselves, how to get what we need.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of growing up, we learned belonging through fitting in. You know, many of us sort of go to school and there's like social cliques and circles and it's like, do I fit in here?
Yeah. Yeah.
And Brené Brown's work sort of really actually looks at the difference between fitting in and belonging. They're very different. Like fitting in often means changing who you are for acceptance.
Yeah.
And belonging is the opposite of that. It is actually first connecting with who you are and then finding connection through there.
Yeah.
But self-belonging comes first. Self-belonging sort of, and this is sort of where it gets tricky. It's like when connection is threatened, can I stay with myself?
Yeah.
Can I choose myself over
the perception of losing connection?
Absolutely.
Right.
And, you know, I think that what I love about belonging in this context is it's so empowering.
Yeah.
It's not like, are they going to like me?
Yeah.
I mean, what do they think?
Yeah.
It's like, what do I think of myself? You know, can I stay with myself through all of these things? And then can I find connection from this place of authenticity?
Yeah.
You know, and that might mean like, you know, that might mean a couple of things. It might mean being completely alone for a while. Brown calls it braving the wilderness.
Yeah,
it's like, can I stay with myself in this terrifying place of aloneness and not viewing it as failure, viewing it as really honoring yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then from this place, maybe you have one great connection, but like maybe that connection is so much more nourishing than being alone in a crowd.
Man, as you're speaking, I'm hearing this, you know, knowledge that becomes embodied becomes wisdom. And that's what I'm hearing from you right now. It's just everything you're sharing right now is, as I'm listening back to your story, that this is your story, right? From fitting into belonging and moving from, as I was thinking about it, you were fitting in to get through all those earlier places that ultimately did bring you to Toru, which is an amazing thing at a business level. But ultimately, because it was inauthentic, it recreated the same wound of you don't belong here and you were pushed out. And that's the place in your life where you started self-belonging, and just to witness you from that point in your story to here and knowing you and knowing what you're up to these days, it's so beautiful to see you truly leading with heart and walking your talk. And I have this saying as well that says, if we have the courage to be authentic, we will create our authentic life. And that's what I see you doing. That's what I'm practicing doing. And I can see the contrast of that from your story in terms of, you didn't know it then and you didn't have any great guidance or teachers to tell you otherwise. So you lived a mask, you lived inauthentically, and it took you to that other life that served its purpose, but ultimately wasn't really you. So I want to commend you for that, Shelby. It's awesome. And that's exactly what I am aspiring and hoping and wanting to bring out in this show is I want to lead with leaders that are willing to be vulnerable. And the wisdom that they bring is actually earned rather than it sounds good on a quote, you know?
Well, think about that reflection. You know, I think I'm grateful for the life that I get to live today. And, you know, what I'm doing now, I think it's like, it's bullseye for, you know, who I am, what I care about. But it wasn't obvious. Like, you know, 5 years ago, however long it was, like when I worked on my 5-year plan, none of this was on the table.
Yeah.
You know, like
yeah.
Moving to Costa Rica to open a queer retreat center was just like, even though it feels totally obvious now, it was not clear.
Yeah.
It's and like
the next logical step from what you did, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But allowing that to unfold, surrendering the plan and leading with heart. So it's
surrender.
It's practice.
And that's another quick wisdom piece to bookmark here before we wrap is, you know, that art, I've seen that in myself and many, is the ability to surrender, trust, and have faith helps to lead with heart, for sure. So you've been an awesome guest today, an amazing example of leading with heart. For our guests, for our listeners, please let them know, how do they stay in touch with you if they want to learn more about you and CASA?
Thank you. Please check us out at CASA.house, www.CASA.house.
With a Q.
Q-A-S-A.
CASA.house. That's a cool URL. Very clever. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here today, Shelby. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. This is the show where strategy meets soul, where we go deeper into the humanness behind amazing leaders. So please stay tuned with me, Dr. Jesse Hansen, on Lead With Heart here on Now Media TV. Plenty more good stuff coming. Take good care and pura vida.